For critical information ignored by the mainstream media, log on to davidicke.com/headlines now.
From Feature Story News in Washington, I'm Priscilla Huff. U.S. President Donald Trump believes the response to the mass shooting in Las Vegas was somehow miraculous. The death toll currently stands at 59, with over 515 injured and some of those casualties in very serious condition. U.S. President Donald Trump has been consistent in his praise of first responders, but he also holds strong opinions about the shooter, Stephen Paddock.
He was a sick man, a demented man. A lot of problems, I guess, and we're looking into him very, very seriously, but we're dealing with a very, very sick individual.
American lawmakers are calling for increased regulations of guns. U.S. President Donald Trump is also confusing many by saying that the Hurricane Maria and its impact on Puerto Rico has thrown the U.S. federal budget out of whack. Again, he praised first responders on the island and his budget director, Mick Mulvaney.
And Mick is in charge of a thing called budget. Now, I hate to tell you, Puerto Rico, but you've thrown our budget a little out of whack because we've spent a lot of money on Puerto Rico, and that's fine. We've saved a lot of lives. If you look at the, every death is a horror.
The Trump administration is expelling 15 Cuban diplomats from the embassy in Washington in response to the alleged health attacks against American personnel in Havana. Our U.S. correspondent Nick Harper reports.
The U.S. government says the expulsions are intended to put the Cubans on the same emergency footing at their embassy in Washington as U.S. staff are at their base in Havana. The U.S. decided last week to pare back its staffing levels in Cuba by around 60%. Following apparent sonic attacks against American workers earlier this year. Around 22 staff at the U.S. Embassy in Havana reported suffering from unexplained hearing, balance, and vision problems. The expulsion of the Cuban diplomats marks the latest setback in diplomatic relations between America and Cuba, which saw a thaw in 2015 under the Obama administration, with formal ties restored and embassies in Havana and Washington reopened. Nick Harper, New York.
Members of the European Parliament have voted in favor of not opening trade talks with the United Kingdom before there's a, quote, major breakthrough in Brexit negotiations. From Brussels, our European correspondent Jack Perrick reports.
Out of 751 members of the European Parliament, 557 voted in favor of the motion, urging the EU not to back down and begin trade talks with the UK until there's a major breakthrough. The EU and the UK have been unable to agree on the three key issues after four rounds of negotiations. Jack Parrock, Brussels.
Thousands protested police violence in Catalonia following the independence referendum. The central Spanish government maintains the vote was illegal. Three American physicists won the Nobel Prize for proving gravitational waves. This is FSN.
Thank you, Priscilla Huff. Welcome to the program to you. I hope you're well this Tuesday. It's October 3rd, 2017. My name is Richie Allen. Got a couple of terrific guests lined up for you this Tuesday. Tweet at Richie Allen Show. Tweet at Richie Allen Show. The email is problematic today. It'll all be sorted out by tomorrow. If you want to contact the program, tweet at Richie Allen Show.
Broadcasting live from the great city of Manchester, England. This is the Richie Allen Show on davidicke.com. The Richie Allen Show, brought to you in association with davidicke.com. And now, live from Manchester, England, here is Richie Allen.
Yeah, I want to say hello to one of my oldest friends who's listening in to this program in Tremor in Waterford County, Nigel Code, the famous Codes. Nigel, nice to know you're live. Got a good show lined up for you today. Maria Heller joins me live this hour to talk about the latest information that we have available to us about the shooting in Las Vegas, which of course has killed scores of people and injured many hundreds more besides. Maria will have the latest. In fact, David was just on to me with a startling bit of information that I didn't know about. I'll bring you that in a minute. Maria Heller this hour. And coming up in the second hour, former CIA counter-terrorism specialist Philip Giraldi, who's well known to many of our listeners, very well known former CIA counter-terrorism specialist. Philip wrote a piece about Jewish influence in US foreign policy about 2 weeks ago for UNZ.com. That's UNZ.com. It's a very, very good piece, very interesting piece. But because of that piece, he was fired from his job with the American Conservative magazine. He didn't write the article for the American Conservative magazine, wrote it for UNZ.com and was fired. He was heavily critical of Jewish influence in US foreign policy. So he joins us in the second hour because that's a very important issue in light of everything that has been happening to friends of mine, including David Icke, Gilad Atzmon, Alison Chablow and others who have dared to question the extent of Jewish influence and Zionist influence on UK politics. So we'll talk about that with Philip Giraldi in the second hour. We're live on davidicke.com, Fab Radio 2 in Manchester and TuneIn Radio. Do bookmark the brand new davidicke.com, terrifically redeveloped in the last few days. davidicke.com. All the information or all the stories I talk about are covered in depth and with analysis on davidicke.com. So David just dropped me a mail before I came on to share with me something I didn't see today, and that is a neighbour of Stephen Paddock, a man who called himself Rick, who is a former Marine, a neighbour of Stephen Paddock, the man whom we are told killed so many people and himself the other day in Vegas. Well, a man called Rick, who phoned Michael Savage, or a show called the Michael Savage Radio Show, he said that Stephen Paddock could not have carried out the massacre and in fact it was a setup. He said he was Paddock's former neighbour. He lived near him between December 2015 and June 2016 in Mesquite, Nevada. I can tell you 100% this is not that kind of guy, said Rick, adding he would see Paddock every other day and the two would go to a local bar and play slot machines. He never even told me that he owned a gun, continued the shooter's neighbour, adding that Paddock didn't express any religious or political opinions during their conversations. I'm not a big conspiracy theory guy, but it don't sit right, said Rick, before making the claim, the extraordinary claim, that the whole shooting was a setup and that Paddock's body may have been left in the hotel room while other assailants carried out the shooting. And I'm well aware that today videos are online, seemingly untouched, unedited videos that appear to show flashes coming from a window of the Mandalay Bay Hotel, and that window doesn't appear to be on the 32nd floor. It appears to be lower. Now, I'm not saying they're muzzle flashes. I can't do that. I'm not an expert. But flashes, rapid fire flashes, shouldn't even say fire, rapid flashing is going on. That's a disturbing video as well, in light of everything else. Maria Heller joins us shortly. For more on it, go to davidicke.com and you'll see a lot of very interesting information about the shooting. You heard on the news that the European Union has said that the talks won't progress because of sticking points on the Irish border, sticking points on the Brexit divorce bill and all of that. Not going to get into that now because I don't have time. And we will obviously continue to talk about that story in the coming days and weeks. And there's another big story, of course, today. What is it? Oh, yes. Amber Rudd, the Home Secretary, has given a speech, her speech, to the Conservative Party conference here in Manchester. And she has said they're going to bring in 15-year prison sentences for people accessing extremist content online. What have you been told for three decades? What have you been told by the man responsible for getting me to do this programme? This is where it's going. Not just bomb-making videos, Amber Rudd said, but people accessing extremist content. What does that mean? Including far-right sites, she said. Far-right websites. If you're accessing those, and if you're not a journalist, and if you don't have a good excuse, you can go to prison. You see where it's all going? Again, more on that a little bit later on. 10 minutes past the hour. About 15 minutes, we will have Maria Heller on. But before that, I've been thinking about something for a few days that I wanted to share with you. And David was in touch with me about the neighbour of Stephen Paddock. David has been talking for about 3 decades about the hidden hand. It's been a big part of his work for 3 decades. And if you've been to see his all-day presentation, you will know that it's fantastic and it explains in great detail and incredibly interestingly what the hidden hand is, what is really behind foreign policy, domestic policy, politics, the things we talk about on this program, who or what is really controlling it. It's quite extraordinary how he does it. It's amazing. And he's doing it, of course, this year. He's still in the middle of the Worldwide Wake Up Tour, davidicke.com for details. But I was thinking in the last few days about a film that I love. And a light bulb went off in my head. You could probably hear it because I'm not one for eureka moments. I'm not one for great ideas. But I want you to listen to a clip from the film Casino, directed by Martin Scorsese, starring Pesci, De Niro, Sharon Stone, she won an Oscar, James Woods, Don Rickles, there's a load of people in it. I want you to listen to a couple of clips from the film, which might give people who've never come across the work of David Icke, of Jordan Maxwell, of Jim Mars, who've never ever paid attention to it, this might give them an in, right? It might give them a foot in the door to looking beyond the system. So listen to this clip. This is from Casino, Scorsese. And Casino is about when the Mafia controlled Las Vegas. So in the clip you're about to hear, you're going to hear how a loan is organised and given to a front man to buy a new casino. And the loan is given through the Teamsters Pension Fund and the loan is $62 million. Okay, so a front man is getting some money to buy or build a casino called the Tangiers, and he's getting it from the Teamsters Pension Fund. So the man getting the loan is owned by, basically in the film, he's owned by the godfathers of the Mafia. Okay? So watching it again recently, I was struck by what an amazing and very simple metaphor Casino is for the global power structure. Have a listen to a couple of clips here. It might make sense, it might not. You might think I'm talking through my backside. Listen carefully.
I know it's a little early for Las Vegas, but I do want to welcome the ladies and gentlemen of the gaming industry.
As far as the world was concerned, Andy Stone, the head of the Teamsters Pension Fund, was a legitimate guy.
A very auspicious occasion.
A powerful man.
Philip, if you would rise.
He even played golf with the president.
On behalf of the Teamsters Pension Fund, my pleasure to present you.
But Andy also took orders. And when he was told to give a pension fund loan to Philip Green
for $62,700,000 for the new Tangier,
he did what he was told.
Now, here was the perfect front man. I mean, what the fuck else could he be? He didn't know too much. He didn't want to know too much, especially that the bosses made the Teamsters lend him the money. He wanted to believe the Teamsters gave him all that fucking money because he was smart.
I say that knowing full well just how much competition we have in this great city.
And where they got Green from? Who the fuck knows? All I know is that Green was an Arizona real estate hustler who barely had enough gas money to come and pick up his own fucking check. And of course it was the boss's man, Andy Stone, who gave all the orders, not the chairman of the fucking board, Philip Green.
I understand.
You hear Philip Green? I understand. So Pesci said the boss's man, Andy Stone, gave the orders and not the chairman of the board, Philip Green, the real estate developer. Andy Stone, the Teamster boss, the metaphor is he represents the banks. And Philip Green, who took the loan of $62 million, is Donald Trump. And the casino is the US government. It couldn't be any clearer, right? The Teamster boss who gave the loan from the pension fund is the banks. Philip Green is Donald Trump. And the casino itself is representative of the US government. It could be any government, but we'll say, for the purpose of this, it's the US government. Now, the bosses who direct Andy Stone, as Joe Pesci said, we'll come back to them a bit later on. So if Andy Stone, the boss's man, who represents the banks, very high-profile guy, he's put Philip Green, Donald Trump, in charge. But Stone, the banks, they can't be seen in the casino or in government. And Green is a stooge. Trump is a stooge. Who's going to manage Philip Green or Donald Trump and run things? Have a listen.
Now all they needed was somebody they could trust to run the casino. And who better than Ace? I mean, he was already in Vegas a couple of years and he had the fucking place clocked. But typical Ace. Give him a shot at running a casino and he tries to talk you out of it.
It's a tough proposition, Andy. You know, if I did it, I'd have to run it my way.
You got it.
I'm serious, no interference.
Nobody's gonna interfere with you running the casino, I guarantee you.
Everybody start to sing, la-di-da.
And that's how they got Ace to take over. They wanted him because Ace ate, slept, and breathed gambling.
So nobody's going to interfere with the man being brought in to run the casino or run the government. He's Sam Rothstein, played by Robert De Niro, and he represents Goldman Sachs. He'll be in charge of Donald Trump, Philip Green, the chairman of the board. He'll be in charge. He'll direct Donald Trump, not so much from the shadows, because he'll be visible in the casino, in the government, but he'll be telling him what to do. You're following this? So you have the banks represented by Andy Stone, gave Philip Green, who's Donald Trump, millions of dollars to acquire and run the casino, which is the government. Trump is useless. He's a stooge. We know this, right? The man in charge of the day-to-day business is the new character, Sam Rothstein, played by De Niro, who is Goldman Sachs. Why plant Goldman Sachs in there? Because they have criminality, corruption, money laundering and stealing down colder than anybody. And we'll tell you who they're stealing for in a minute. Let's hear more about Sam Rothstein, Robert De Niro or Goldman Sachs.
He made his first bet when he was 15 years old and he always made money. But he didn't bet like you or me. You know, having some fun with it, shit like that.
What the hell did you learn how to do?
He bet like a fucking brain surgeon.
Place the checks properly. That's the way you do it. Yes.
He had to know everything, this guy. He'd find out the kind of inside stuff nobody else knew, and that's what he put his money on. He'd be working on this shit day and night. There was nothing about a game he was going to bet that he didn't know.
He's got down at six. Charlie down at seven.
Season after season, the prick was the only guaranteed winner I ever knew. But he was so serious about it all that I don't think he ever enjoyed himself. But that's just the way he was. But back then, the bosses didn't give a fuck about whether he enjoyed himself or not. To them, he was a cash register. All they had to do was ring the bell and take the money.
Just ring the bell. So he has the insider information that nobody else has, and he never loses. That's why he's there, to steal and skim and make sure that those really in charge, who we'll come to in a minute, get the lion's share of the wealth. To the public, it all looks like it's on the up and up. It's all brilliant. But in truth, their lives are going down the toilet. Their money is decreasing and deteriorating all the time. The boss has only had to ring the bell and he'd come up with the goods. He never loses. That's Goldman Sachs, right? And Philip Green or Donald Trump hasn't a clue. Ego, remember? Remember at the start he said he wanted to believe the Teamsters gave him all that money because he was smart, the real estate developer. Well, they didn't. They gave him all that money because he's easily manipulated, because he craves the job, he craves the fame and the fortune. Couldn't care less about anything else. As long as I'm on telly and I'm the president, I couldn't care less. So Ace Rothstein, played by Robert De Niro or Goldman Sachs, goes to deliver the goods to his boss and Andy Stone's boss. Andy Stone is the Teamster representing the banks. They go to deliver all the money and all the land and all the power they've stolen from people. And the real boss, the man at the top of the pyramid, has a question for De Niro and Goldman Sachs and the banks in general, Andy Stone.
Ace, where are we going out for next week?
Well, it's a little too early. I'd say Thursday would be good. I'll know by then. Is that all right?
Okay. You come by the house?
I'll come by.
7 o'clock.
7.
Good job, that way. Keep it up. Okay, Ace. Hey, Nick. Hey, Nick.
I'll be right out.
How's your mother? Nicky. See that guy? He's a good eye on him. He's making a lot of money for us. He's going to continue making a lot of money for us. So keep a good eye on him. We'll like the fucking feds out there, like, with our brains. Okay.
All right.
Okay. Yeah, come on.
Yeah.
Fine.
Let me take this. So now, on top of everything else, I got to make sure nobody fucks around with the Golden Jew.
And the real boss back east who told Joe Pesci to make sure that nobody fucks around with the Goldman Jew, who's he? The guy who tells everybody else what to do. Nobody knows who he is. Well, his name is Rothschild. And there are a couple of other guys in the room with him. You can see them in the background. Also big fat guys. They're called Rockefeller, Warburg and Schiff. Nobody knows who these guys are. And who was he telling to make sure that nobody fucks with the Golden Jew? Who is Joe Pesci representing in this metaphorical drama? Well, he plays Nick Santoro, who represents the press barons and the intelligence agencies. Make sure nobody finds out what De Niro is doing on our behalf, lest they come looking for us. And I must have seen the film about 400 times, that film. And only recently watching the introduction again to the main players, how the casino was acquired, the front man, the Teamsters boss, the guy being brought in, the gambler, and all of that, did I realise what an amazing metaphor it is for the global power structure today. That's Casino, Martin Scorsese. Is there any evidence that Scorsese knew what he was doing, that he has some inside information, that he was hiding this in plain sight in the film, which is based on Nicholas Pileggi's book, by the way? It really is. It's loosely based on a true story, but has Scorsese directed that in a way that we might understand it? I don't know, but it's fascinating stuff. It's 21 minutes past the hour. You might share that clip with some of your friends who think you're crazy when you talk about The Hidden Hand. That was inspired by the work of David Icke. And to really explain that, you need hours and hours and hours and hours to explain it in terms of putting the characters into place, the history of it, of course, the round table, all these organisations, the European Union. But just to give somebody a way into it, that's not a bad metaphor at all. This is your Richie Allen Show. Maria Heller is next.
Is your mind full of ideas, yet you struggle to put them down on paper? Characters with no home, unfinished concepts that you always wanted to finalise, yet lacked knowledge and drive to complete? The Creative Writing Course from Creative Imaginings may be the long-awaited answer, designed to help you finish your masterpiece with better language techniques, detailed study of the character, plotted suspense chain, and valuable information to get published. Don't delay your creation. Complete your 100% online course at creativeimaginings.com.au.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
Introducing the H2O app, a powerful water structuring application that programs vibrational energies into water through the use of different sound frequencies. Once programmed, the use of water for drinking, cooking, bathing. Give it to your friends and colleagues or spread it around the garden. The list goes on. It's not just water that the app can be used for either. It's great for programming crystals too. The H2O app is free to download and is available on both Android and Apple platforms. For further information, go to h2oapp.online.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbajerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
Welcome back to the programme. 24 minutes past the hour for Tuesday, October 3rd, 2017. Without any further ado, let's welcome our first guest to the programme. Check her out at her website. It's Maria, M-E-R-I-A.net. Terrific journalist, been on this programme many times before. Makes a terrific daily programme, which you can access at maria.net with a bunch of researchers, men and women, piecing together the reality behind the commercial and national media headlines. She will have a lot, I imagine, to say about what's happened in the last couple of days. Let's welcome back to the programme our friend Maria Heller. Maria, welcome back.
It's good to be back. How are you doing, Richie?
I'm not too bad at all, Maria. It's a fluid, to use a mainstream media term, it's a fluid situation what's happened in Vegas, in Las Vegas yesterday. Dreadful thing. Information is emerging all the time about it. New information, claims and counterclaims by various journalists. From what you've seen in the last 36 hours, Maria, what do you understand has happened exactly?
Well, so far to me, and I said it on my show yesterday, this has all the makings of a Manchurian candidate. When the more you learn about this man, although now they're trying to fill in what I call a backstory, where they make up information about him or somebody in his family that was a criminal or whatever. The first day of reporting, there's nothing about this guy. And I always wait. You don't ever have to wait too long to see all the irregularities, to see all the lies, and then to see the demonization of the supposed shooter, which, of course, they're always dead. So dead men tell no tales. I'm not saying, and this is, I think, a problem, Richie, a lot of people that call themselves alternative media, they make the mistake every time something like this happens to say it didn't happen or no one was killed. And that's a disservice to their listeners, because our governments have no problem killing us, okay, for their political agenda. So if Americans have to die, so be it. And now they're claiming this is the biggest mass shooting in American history. What a lie. And I thought, my first thought was, what about Wounded Knee? 250 Native Americans killed while they slept. What about the invasion of this country where we killed millions of them? And then 9/11, where 3,000 of us were killed for a political agenda.
Do you know, things are emerging that are pretty disturbing, aren't they? You made a good point about not jumping to conclusions, which, you know, we sadly see all too many people do. And I want to echo that, and then I want to move on, because I'm always bashing the independent media. Maybe I do it too much, but there is a lot of that. David sent me a piece today about, which I hadn't seen, one of his neighbours phoned in a radio show and said, look, I don't understand this. I can't believe the man would do it. I knew him quite well. I don't believe he owned a gun, and he certainly didn't have any religious or political opinions. And we saw yesterday, didn't we, Maria, the absolute genuine shock and disbelief on the face of his brother in Orlando, who was obviously doorstepped by the media. And he said he's not a gun enthusiast. He's not. And what the UK media have been able to do is piece together a backstory that shows them a very comfortably well-off man, pilot's license, had the fishing and hunting licenses, seemed to have a good life. You couldn't imagine what would happen in a man, you know, in a man's life, a man like that, that would lead him to do something like that. But sadly...
Or it could just be a patsy.
Yeah.
You know, there were so many red flags on this story. You know, when you talked to me about it yesterday, I was like, Richie, I just woke up. It's too soon to put this together. But the more I look at it, there's so many red flags, because I've covered assassinations for so many years on my show, whether it was Bobby Kennedy, whether it was John Kennedy, whether all the way back to Lincoln, as a matter of fact. And when I looked at this, and I was reading about a woman in the crowd that told everybody, you're all going to die today. The first thing my mind connected to was the woman in the polka dot dress that was the trigger for Sirhan Sirhan, and the backstory we got on the assassination of Bobby Kennedy. So, you know, to me, you know, my mind goes in so many different directions when I see these stories. And how did this guy get these super heavy, gigantic guns? How did he get so many of them into a hotel room? You know, it wasn't like he's 20 years old and could book it up the stairs with 17, you know, machine guns. It's the same old story. I mean, it's the same old MO. You know, the last shooting, I just gave up. I said, you know what? I don't want to cover these anymore. I don't want to investigate them anymore, because they are all the same. Yeah. And the amount of work is gigantic. And then you got a lot of fake news going around, of course, on social media, where I'm finally out of, by the way, Richie, I'm out of Facebook jail today. I've been in Facebook jail for a couple of weeks.
Have you? You've been banned, have you?
Yeah, fifth time. So I guess I should get a medal or a jacket.
Yeah.
So at least I was able to let people know that I was going to be on your show today.
And then even then, you don't know how many of your followers even see that message. That's the other thing about Facebook. This man, we've come to understand over the years, or at least I have, through the work of other people, not my work, but the work of other people, that the technology has existed for a long time to control the actions and the thoughts of a target. And people outside of the idiotic independent media, there are some decent people that we've known over the years who are not making any definite claims, but they are saying, as you hinted at, this might be the work of, it might be the work of a man whom was manipulated from, or you know, from someplace else, or by a third party. But then, I think, like you said, Maria, there are issues getting the hardware into the room. We understand that the Vegas casinos are topped up with the type of security that you wouldn't expect to see at a hotel in London or in Manchester or elsewhere. I believe metal detectors and stuff like that. They're very nervous. Obviously, you know, casinos and people, you know, people wanting to get revenge on casinos where they've lost the money. I read somewhere before that once you get past the second floor in a casino, the windows don't open because they're worried about suicides. That is
right.
Virtually
Listen,
impossible.
I've stayed at Mandalay Bay. Their rooms are beautiful, but there's no way their rooms are that big where you see those two windows that were punched out are in the same room. That's right. Impossible. So right away, I waited to see how long it would take to say it was just a lone gunman. And of course, he's dead. And then you had the confusing stories about his girlfriend, who supposedly was taken into custody and then released. And then we were told that she wasn't because she was in the Philippines. So, you know, when they start screwing up their stories like that, it's not what they would like to say, the fog of war. It's deliberate. And the stories just go away. You know, when Lee Harvey Oswald said, when they said you killed the president, Lee Harvey Oswald said, what? He says, I didn't kill anybody. I'm a patsy. And then, of course, Jack Ruby was sent in by the people that pulled it off to make sure Lee Harvey Oswald was dead. So you look at these shootings in America, and most of the time the perpetrators are killed. First they said the SWAT team killed him. Then they said he killed himself.
Yeah, that's right. They changed their story.
So, you know, which one is it? Do you know what I'm saying? And it's the same old stuff. I hate to say it, Richie, but I'm getting tired.
You're getting tired of it.
Apart these kind of stories because it's all the same.
You've been covering them for many years, and there are so many anomalies. You have the video that looks like flashes are coming from another window. Now, some people say muzzle flashes, but you and I are honest enough to admit, maybe that's why we've been doing this as long as we have. We're honest enough to admit that. I don't know a muzzle flash from the flash of a torch. What would I know? But people are saying it's evidence of another shooter.
The original report said that there were, you know, multiple shootings going on. Some police went over to the Bellagio Hotel. But those stories went away.
Yeah, you know,
they reported this story as multiple shooters.
Can we say, though, because, again, you know, not to be extolling the virtues of our experience, but you and I know that because of the ridiculous 24-hour news cycle and the madness of trying to get information to be one step ahead of your competitors, they just broadcast anything and everything. It's like shooting, throwing darts at a dartboard while blindfolded. So a lot of what comes out that we say is contradictory, and we say sometimes it's deliberate, you know, it's deliberate in terms of it's confusing people. It's also, there's also a simple explanation for the contradictory stories. They're just putting everything out, anything. They're saying anything in the first 20 minutes.
Well, look at yesterday. The news made the mistake of prematurely calling the death of Tom Petty. So by the time everybody mourned Tom Petty, then they had to admit that he wasn't dead yet.
Yeah.
And then this morning, they had confirmation from his family that he did die. But look how fast that kind of misinformation spread all over the internet. And I checked the original story before I posted it. And it was, I saw nothing but confirmation. And then later on in the day, oh, we made a mistake.
Our guest is Maria Heller. This there, you want to check out Maria Heller at maria.net. You really do. M-E-R-I-A.net. Our mutual friend, Patricia Braunschweiler, who's listening in Switzerland this evening. Patricia, great to know you're on. She says security cameras showing him bringing this huge arsenal to his room, question mark. You see, Patricia Braunschweiler should have been a journalist. It's a fantastic question. It's the first question they should be asking at CNN is to this hotel. Please, can, for the benefit of our broadcasts, can you please share us the video of Mr. Paddock walking into the room with all the gear? That'd be nice, wouldn't it, Maria?
Well, supposedly he walked up the steps with those things. Okay, even a handgun weighs about 5 pounds.
Yeah.
So how does a 64-year-old man, he didn't look like he was, you know, physically fit, how'd he manage to do that? But the bottom line is, it's the same old story. And you just have to be patient. It's kind of like Puerto Rico. I said, okay, we have to wait and see who benefits from this weather manipulation. And I said that the first day. And now I know who benefited, and I've been covering it as the information comes out. But you got to look at the vulture capitalist. I guess the first two hurricanes weren't enough to totally wipe out Puerto Rico. So they made sure the third one did the job, and now Wall Street's going to make a whole lot of money. So, you know, people don't look at who's going to benefit from the shooting in Las Vegas.
Well, let's talk about that then, because let's accept, for the sake of the conversation, let's accept that there are a lot of glaring holes in the official story. We know there are. You're honest enough to admit, like me, that what happened or who's behind it, we don't know. We can only ask questions, which is what we're doing. But let's just say that the official story is nonsense. Who stands to benefit most, in your opinion, from that atrocity the other day? Who wins out of this situation?
Well, immediately gun sales rose in the United States. Before those people bled to death, gun sales were up. Every single time we have a shooting like this, gun sales go up. And this happened the same week that Congress is supposed to vote on whether or not to legalize silencers for everybody's guns. Now, imagine if that shooting yesterday was with a silencer. People would have been just falling to the floor and nobody would have even known they were being shot at. And, you know, Donald Trump, because he has to reverse everything Obama did a couple of months ago, reversed Obama's ban on mentally ill being able to buy guns.
Right.
So you have to look at, it's the gun lobby that's going to benefit, because laws never change in this country. The sales go up and the fear goes up. I'm sure you saw what happened in Spain and Catalonia, with the police out of control, beating those people into bloody messes.
Beating the democracy into them. I just want to say something to you. I'm, this is in no way, now, I'm not trying to correct you or contradict you. You've probably seen more guns than I have. But I did a bit of research today. The guns he allegedly used, you couldn't put a silencer on them, apparently. You couldn't, because...
Well, I just said that kind of satirically.
No, you did, yeah, but...
Can't put a silencer on a machine gun.
No, of course, but just in case our listeners, because some of our listeners might not know
that.
Oh, okay. Yeah, just...
Good catch. But you know what? Sometimes it's just, I try to point out the ridiculousness of things through satire, because otherwise, how can people really handle this? You know what I mean? This country's going to hell in a handbasket right now. And let's not forget, this is a big distraction from Trump's failure to the Puerto Rican people and his Russia investigation. You know, just yesterday, I think it was on my show, I said to my audience, this is a huge story that nobody's seeing and nobody's covering because of all this other stuff. But Trump actually asked the judge to dismiss the lawsuits against him under the Emoluments Clause. Richie, that's huge.
It's massive, yeah.
You know, so he's doing all this stuff behind the scenes and putting out all this ridiculousness, you know, to the people through his Twitter account. But he's creating a lot of really sick and twisted policies and putting in some of the worst judges and Christian fanatics that you could ever believe in, you know, positions of power.
His puppet masters are certainly doing that. I want to ask you something about this, because I've heard your show over the years. I've been privileged to listen to your show and the many guests you have on it. And you've often talked with guests, and what I like about it is sometimes you disagree with them and you get into it, and that's good. But you've talked about the desecration of the Posse Comitatus Act, which effectively prevents the military from operating in domestic policing issues on US soil. However, what we've seen, of course, in recent years is the hyper-militarization of the police to the point that they look like the army and then some. Now, in the heartland, you know, of your country, I don't like guns, Marie. I've never fired one. I don't think I ever would own one or ever would fire one. But I think if I saw what was happening to police forces, you alluded to what happened in Catalonia. I mean, Jesus, look at those police. Look at the way they're dressed. Look at the hardware they're packing. I might want to arm myself, Maria. And a lot of these people that we call...
Well, the only reason I brought up the cops in Catalonia is when I saw what was happening in Vegas, you have to remember, these people are on a global mission to put the world in a global continuous state of fear so that we can have a one world police, one world army, and the one world, you know, run by the super maniacs that are behind the scenes now. So these things don't happen simultaneously by accident.
A friend of mine, Jean-Ann Crowley, sent me a link, which I looked at today. I'm not too sure about it, but I just want to acknowledge...
They said that they're getting to the point where they're afraid to go out in public.
They're afraid to go out.
Right. They don't want to go out in public. They don't want to be in a shopping mall. They don't want to be where there's a lot of people or a movie theater. And after the shooting in Vegas, well, you have to say problem, reaction, solution. You know, they want to isolate us all, make us all shelter in place. So we're even easier to control than we already are.
By the way, there was a little drop in the connection between us, and we crossed over one another there. I was just making a point. A friend of mine, Jean-Ann Crowley, who helps out with the program from time to time, sent me a link today, which apparently shows that back in early September, somebody was warning people to stay away from large gatherings in Las Vegas. Now, I don't know how true this is or not. It's easy to manipulate things and manipulate postings. I just don't know.
Right. But I do want to tell you, because I know you don't live here, the entire state of Nevada, including Las Vegas, open carry is legal. It's legal everywhere. You can even open carry in a casino. It's not against the law.
I thought this. So tell me this. I didn't know for a fact that you could open carry in Vegas. I didn't know that. However, it occurred to me that there might have been people at that concert who were packing hardware. And I was wondering why there wasn't a lunatic free-for-all with people firing at the window. I mean, you know, thank heavens there wasn't, because maybe more people would have been killed. But I thought
A lot of times at these concerts now, you have to go through security like at an airport. So even if they had arms, I would think they would have been disarmed before they went into the venue.
You would have thought so, yeah. I mean, it was an open-air venue, wasn't it? But yes, you would have thought that these people would have been disarmed.
But my understanding was there were concrete walls all around that venue. A lot of people said they were trapped. They couldn't get out because they were like 10-foot walls. So if you couldn't find an exit, and some people said exits were blocked, you were trapped. You were literally, you know, like, what did they say? Like shooting ducks in a barrel.
Maria Heller is our guest this hour. Go to maria.net. That's her website. That's where you'll find her programs and her blogs. We're talking, of course, about the shooting in Las Vegas the other evening. As it stands, nearly 60 people killed, murdered, undoubtedly. By who, maybe we don't know who was responsible for it, but hundreds injured. The latest on it is that the authorities, in inverted commas, are trying to establish a motive for the man they have named as the killer. And they've named Mr. Stephen Paddock, 64 years old, comfortable retiree. His family are absolutely stunned. His friends are stunned. I mentioned earlier on, it's on davidicke.com. Man who lived near him said it couldn't have been him. He didn't believe it. Not only did he not own a gun, but he wasn't religious or political in any way. Do you know what's interesting, Maria?
He doesn't fit the profile. They're all supposedly stymied about.
So gun sales go up. But at the same time, do you expect there to be legislation or proposed legislation that will ban semi-automatic weapons or automatic weapons? Do you see that happening?
No, absolutely not. I mean, Trump's already reversed the pitiful gun laws we did have. He's going to kowtow to the NRA, even though today he said, oh, we'll get around to talking about guns. That's never going to happen. You know, everybody always said, oh, you know, under Obama, Obama's coming for your guns. That never happened. I mean, the gun lobby is that strong in this country, and half of Congress is paid off by them.
Yeah, they wield a huge influence. Jen, right. Jen, who's listening on the Pacific Coast, sent a video. I've retweeted it there. A video that alleges that M24OB, M240B military guns were used in the shooting, and they've compared some clips. There is a lot of video and audio uploaded by various alleged researchers. I'm not decrying this clip. I haven't seen it. It could be very right. good. But people need to be careful.
A lot of people said the
believe.
Only way you could get those guns is through the military.
You know, I'm just looking, Maria, on Twitter just to make sure that I'm reading it correctly, the video Jen sent me.
I'm not on Twitter. I don't want to get too confused while I'm talking to you.
Yeah, it's M240B. That's the machine gun. Apparently, it's a very, very powerful machine
gun. From what I understand, it's not something you can buy in a gun shop.
No.
And yet, today I noticed that they're making the backstory even crazier. Besides all the, what did they say, 19, 17 guns. Now they're saying that they found chemicals in his car that could have been used to make an explosive. So they have to, you know, listen, when there's an assassination like that, I go back to John Kennedy's assassination and what they've done since then. First, they assassinate the person. Then they assassinate the person's character.
And there's very little, of course, that his friends and family can do because they won't be given the access to CNN and C-SPAN to put the other side of it and say, as his brother did say, I can't believe this at all. Nothing about him gives us any clues that he would ever do anything like that. They won't get the access, and the story will be repeated from one bureau to another until the public get it into their heads that this was a guy who flipped. He was a madman, right?
Well, and that's the law that we had in place, so psychos can't get guns. But maybe Trump reversed it so he can get a gun. Listen, there's so much to this story that I'm sure is going to keep building on. But when, you know, I was watching it, you know, on TV yesterday, and no one wanted, everybody was saying this isn't the time to talk about guns. Don't make this political. Well, they say that after every mass shooting. So obviously there's never a time to talk about guns.
Well, let me ask you
and
this.
I'm pro-gun. Okay. I'm pro-gun for self-defense. And I never was when I grew up and lived in New York. All right, New Yorkers have a very strong distaste for guns. But once I moved out to the desert and had a few dangerous situations that I found myself in, I realized that people out here are crazy and I need to be able to defend myself even if I go on a walk.
People in general are nuts. So,
well, now I think the whole planet is nuts. But what I said this morning, which is interesting, usually when we get hit by, you know, the kind of hurricanes we've had, the mass shooting and whatnot, we used to get an outpouring of love and support from every country on earth. I've seen none of that since Trump is in office.
In terms of these disasters, because the usual suspects in UK politics have been gushing about, you know, sending their love and prayers to Vegas and America and the UK have a special relationship. I've not seen much change there now, despite, you know, the distaste that the UK
right.
media
well,
has.
Well, I made another
Trump.
Post. Now, how's that love and prayers working out for you?
Yeah.
You know, it's always love and prayers. Well, guess what? The people in Puerto Rico don't need your love and prayers. They need food. They need water. They need medicine. They need electricity. They need to be able to fly out of Puerto Rico without having to sign a paper telling Donald Trump that they're going to pay back the airfare for their rescue. He didn't do that with Texas or Florida.
And on the weather, which we've covered and obviously you've covered since you were last on, you do buy into the possibility that weather systems formed by or at least begun by solar activity – can be accelerated by hardware, software, whatever you want to call it, here. And those natural weather phenomenons can be turned into, by basically the press of a button or the flick of a switch, can be turned into something absolutely horrendous.
Of course, and this is nothing new, okay? They've been manipulating the weather since 1923. And if I know you probably have people listening that are saying, oh, that's crazy. Well, I'm going to ask your listeners to just watch one movie on YouTube. So all they're going to need to do is watch one. And it's called Franken Skies. Now, Richie, as many years as I've covered weather manipulation, geoengineering, the U.S. Patents Office, how many, you know, patents are in place, I said, okay, there can't be anything new about this movie. In the first 20 minutes, I learned about 10 more things.
Yeah, it's very good. I've had the director on. I've had the creator of it on this program. I'm sure you've had him on. You've interviewed him.
No, I didn't even know who he was. I just, somebody referred, you know.
Yeah. He's been on. It is a terrific film, and it's very... It's worth watching. And of course, the payoff.
So yeah, a lot of this is from the Sun. You're right. And David's, I don't know how many times he has to cover it for people to understand. But we do manipulate it. I've seen the films where you see charges going off and the way they try to steer these things and create them and buff them up. And we haven't had normal weather in forever. We wouldn't even know what normal weather is.
And what we saw in the last few weeks was truly extraordinary, wasn't it? I mean, it was pulverizing stuff one after the other. It never seemed like it was going to end.
Right. I mean, my sisters all live in Florida, and they've been there for like 30 years, so they've been through several hurricanes. They said this one was the most absolute worst, most frightening, and that they will never stay in Florida for another hurricane.
And there are several payoffs, aren't there, for those in power, the elites, shall we call them?
For the vulture capitalists.
That's right.
Proper reaction solution. If they can manipulate the weather and beef up the industries that are not doing well, why not? They don't care how many people die. I don't know if you ever saw Michael Murphy's films.
I did. Yeah.
But, you know, every time I see a storm like that, destruction like that, I think of the one that was called Why in the World Are They Spraying? Where he shows how Wall Street bets on these events and makes money on them. You know, create the drought, go in, buy the farmland, 10 cents on the dollar.
That's right.
They're going to do the same thing with Puerto Rico. Puerto Rico will turn into a white man's paradise after this. So watch it happen.
It's gentrification as well. They devalue land, property prices, and they gentrify the area. But also, of course, if they want to get people out of an area, and we talk all the time on this program about Agenda 2130, getting people into super cities, getting people out of rural areas, getting them away from the coasts, and getting them into these Blade Runner-type super cities, there's so many different payoffs if you can manipulate the weather, right?
Oh, yeah, but you talk to people about Agenda 21, Agenda 30... They just don't want to do any research or homework. And I'm like, listen, if you don't want to sit down and just watch a movie, then there's nothing I can do to help you. Do you know what I mean? I'm not going to sit here and explain, 60-something years of living and learning to somebody in 10 minutes because they're too lazy to do any of their own homework. You know, you're supposed to be a participatory human being, being awake doesn't mean that you just walk around and move around. You have to participate in what's going on here.
But you know who's more to blame? Do you know who's more to blame for the stagnation? The so-called truth or industrial complex is more to blame than mainstream media. I really believe that. I've never been as depressed looking at the independent media and how pathetic it is, how badly, how poor... The standard of reporting, of investigation is dreadful. It's the narcissistic truth or industrial complex.
It's not just
complex.
That. It's like they all want to be right. It's like 9/11. Everybody still wants to be right, whatever their theory is. And I said, listen, none of us can prove our theories because we don't have the evidence and the government has it and they're never giving it to us. But I watch people constantly hold on, and I think that's ego. That makes them all, look at what I'm writing, look at what I'm doing, but they don't really do the homework.
No, a little thing, like fact checking and referencing your sources, basic journalistic skills have just disappeared off the face of the earth. We're nearly out of time, Marie. I suppose all we can do now is just watch and wait and see what comes out of this in the next few days.
Sooner or later, they hand us all the information. It just takes time.
It takes time, but also not to, because they have desensitized us to violence, and they've made us almost apathetic about those who do die. And actually, that serves the elite when we become so used to what they do that we don't see the people who died as, we don't see them as people and as, you know, as family, men and women, as mothers and fathers. We don't see that. We just see them as statistics, which is what we're supposed to see them as. Because if we did see them, and if we did have empathy, if empathy hadn't been driven out of us by the establishment, we might be more inclined to do something about it. You know what I'm
saying?
Absolutely. But we
don't. Well, I think the whole world should take a knee.
Do you know, we could have spoken about that as well. I'm sure we'll get you back on talking about that. Marie, it's always brilliant. It's always brilliant having you on. Folks, do, if you haven't already, check out Maria's show. It can be accessed at MariaMERIA.net, the longest running podcast on the interweb. It really is, and there's a reason why it's lasted as long as it has. It's terrific. Thanks, Maria, for coming back. We'll talk again real soon.
My pleasure.
And look after yourself. The terrific Maria Heller live on the line there. Do check out maria.net, MERIA.net, for more information on this story and others as well. It's exactly, is it 4 minutes to the top of the hour? It is. We better crack on. 4 minutes to the top of the hour. I will take a very quick break. Back with plenty more in a minute. At Richie Allen Show on Twitter. A lot of tweets came in there.
Is your mind full of ideas, yet you struggle to put them down on paper? Characters with no home, unfinished concepts that you always wanted to finalise, yet lacked knowledge and drive to complete? The Creative Writing Course from Creative Imaginings may be the long-awaited answer. Designed to help you finish your masterpiece with better language techniques, detailed study of the character, plotted suspense chain, and valuable information to get published. Don't delay your creation. Complete your 100% online course at creativeimaginings.com.au.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
Introducing the H2O app, a powerful water structuring application that programs vibrational energies into water through the use of different sound frequencies. Once programmed, the use of water for drinking, cooking, bathing. Give it to your friends and colleagues or spread it around the garden. The list goes on. It's not just water that the app can be used for either. It's great for programming crystals too. The H2O app is free to download and is available on both Android and Apple platforms. For further information, go to h2oapp.online.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbajerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
Welcome back to the program. It's pretty much a minute to the top of the hour. It's Tuesday's Richie Allen Show, which is live on davidicke.com. We're on Fab Radio 2 here in Manchester, TuneIn Radio and richieallen.co.uk. Thanks for your company. Thanks for tuning in. A big thanks again to Maria Heller there. Thanks to Jen. Thanks to William in Scotland, William Henderson. To Yvonne, who's in Austria. Mark Morrison, Peter. Mary Ellen Armstrong. How you doing, Mary Ellen? She tweets, Richie, my mother was born in 1924. She told me when I was a child that they do manipulate the weather. people need to wise up to this. Jen came back to remind me it was Matt Landman from Frankenskies who was on the programme. Good evening to Faisal, to Rich Mortimer as well. There's a lot of discussion going on there on Twitter about the shooting in Vegas and who and what might have been responsible for that. Nicolene Ekstrand says, Richie, Maria is a lefty. I'm sorry. Don't know what you're sorry for. Whatever Maria is, like every other point of view, she is welcome on this programme, regardless of the point of view that she has. Nobody is precluded here from coming on, no matter what they think. Hi to Danny Warden as well, who says that Stephen Paddock checked in 3 days before the shooting and he could have made hundreds of trips concealing weapons. I made this point as well, Danny. Thank you for reminding me of that. And Brian says, apparently a silencer would melt or burn after serious rapid fire from a semi-automatic or an automatic weapon. That's what I understand, Brian. I know nothing about guns, but I know a man who does. And I was in touch with him today, and he said that as well. Hi to Susan as well, and to everybody else who's tweeting in. You need only go to twitter.com, and where it says search Twitter, put Richie Allen Show, all one word, in the bar. When you press enter, you will see what people have been tweeting me. Couldn't be any simpler than that. Right. Philip Giraldi should be standing by for us, so we'll line him up. We're going to be talking about an article that he wrote for Unz.com. That's Ron Unz and Co. Ron Unz, of course, the journalist, runs Unz.com. Philip wrote an article for Unz.com entitled American Jews Are Driving America's Wars. As a consequence of that article, his regular gig with the American Conservative, well, he lost that gig. The editor told him he was fired. There's been a lot of furore about this article. And he's written about it again today, an article entitled Why I Was Fired. And we'll find out more about that when we speak with him in a minute. Before that, we'll take some music. We've had no music today. Let's have some music from the Bee Gees. Ah, the Bee Gees. 90 seconds past the hour. Welcome to the Richie Allen Show if you're just tuning in. Good to be with you. Tuesday, October 3rd, in association with DavidIke.com. Philip Giraldi is next after this. Stay. Right, the Bee Gees on your Richie Allen Show. It's exactly 5 minutes past the hour. It is Tuesday, 3rd of October, 2017. If you're joining us late, you're very welcome. You missed the great Maria Heller in hour one. Of course, the programme is podcasted on podomatic.com and on YouTube as well. Do go to podomatic.com, go to youtube.com and subscribe to the Richie Allen Show. Now, our next guest has been on the programme before. I like him a lot. You'll have seen him over the years everywhere. Press TV, Fox News, MSNBC, 60 Minutes, everywhere. He's a former counter-terrorism specialist with the CIA. Decorated man. And we've spoken about many issues with him on this programme before. We were introduced to him by the lovely Ray McGovern. Now, a couple of weeks ago, he published an article, or had an article published on UNS.com entitled America's Jews Are Driving America's Wars. I read the article. It's an excellent article, very well researched, very thought-provoking, fair. And it was about the power wielded by Jewish advocacy groups in the United States, how that power has risen, unchecked, it must be said, and what it has led to in terms of US foreign policy, even you could say US domestic policy. How these groups wield power over those who make policy, write policy, and the effect that has on people overseas and the effects it has on the interests of American citizens, most importantly. Very good article. UNS.com, I will tweet it out. He was surprised, no doubt, to get a call from the editor of the American Conservative, where he had a regular gig for 15 years, writing articles about foreign policy and domestic policy. The American Conservative called him up and said, we don't like the article that you had published on UNS.com, and as a result, we've got to distance ourselves from you and we won't be carrying your work anymore. But not only that, friends of his, including Valerie Plame, received a torrent of abuse online for discussing the article and the very important points made in the article, again entitled American Jews Are Driving America's Wars. Now, he's written a follow-up to that, which is on UNS.com. I will tweet it out. It was published this morning, entitled How I Got Fired. Big thanks to Philip Giraldi for giving us his time today. Philip, thanks for coming back on. How are you?
Well, I'm fine. Thanks for having me on with you.
Really good to have you back on. You're a very experienced man. You are, in every sense of the word, experienced, of course, all the years at the CIA. And I mentioned you've appeared on more television news shows, Philip, than I've had hot dinners. You've been around. Some might say, this sounds very like Fox News, doesn't it? Some might say that your experience, you might have expected some reaction to your article, fair and balanced and thought-provoking as it is, you must have expected a reaction from the Jewish lobby. What do you say?
Well, it's interesting. I deliberately tried to push this to the edge. I knew that by using the word Jewish or Jew, that there would be a high degree of pushback. But that was deliberate, because my thinking on this was that the people that we see on television nightly, on weekends, advocating war with Iran, are basically the same people who were advocating war with Iraq and were advocating war with Libya and are currently advocating war with Syria. And they're almost 100% Jewish. And the war with Iran, of course, is a major objective of the self-identified Jewish state, Israel. And it seemed to me that when the U.S. media was talking about these things, they would have a whole list of people who were urging a war with Iran sooner rather than later. Every single name on the list would be Jewish. And the article would go on to mention Israel's interest in this. And they were afraid of ever to say Jew or Jewish as being part of the issue. So I said, let me push on this and see what happens. And what happened was there was an explosion from the mainstream media targeting me and Valerie Plame for our audacity in terms of using this choice of word.
In doing what they did, they basically proved, if you look at your article as a theorem, if we were at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology mathematical department, Philip, by reacting in the way they did, they proved the basis of your argument, of your article, that to ask questions about Jewish influence on US politics and US domestic and foreign policy, you're to be labelled a racist and anti-Semite. You took this on in your article, and lo and behold, those we expected to do it came out and labelled you as an anti-Semite and as a racist. It's kind of... it's lending credibility to your argument, isn't it?
Yeah, that's precisely what the point I make at the end of my article, which the one that came out today, essentially saying, well, look, this proves the argument. Here I was writing for 15 years for a publication that basically, when it started 15 years ago, I was one of the original writers and have been with them for 15 years, writing consistently about national security, international policy, that sort of thing. And abruptly, I get a phone call telling me that this piece was not acceptable. They didn't tell me exactly why it wasn't acceptable, but of course, I pretty much understood that. And they would be severing the relationship with me. And poor Valerie Plame, all she did was she read my article and gave it kind of a thumbs up on the tweeter and said, this is interesting stuff. And they came down on her like a ton of bricks because she's more of a public figure than I am. She's known, connected with a number of charities and anti-war type movements. So she was a known figure, and they literally went after her unbelievably, forcing her to apologize and apologize and apologize again. So this basically makes my case that you cross this line and you talk about the power. Now, this is Jewish power we're talking about in the United States. And of course, I would point out you have the same thing in England, possibly even worse. And the fact is that, you know, this power is exercised to silence people who criticize what American Jews are doing vis-a-vis Israel, which is a foreign country and doesn't have the same interests as the United States, but is treated as almost like a spoiled child. Anything Israel wants, Israel gets.
It's interesting, Philip. Some years ago, when I was working in commercial media, I was under the thumb of a producer who, whenever I spoke to somebody like you, they would have been encouraging me to make a mess of the interview, to make it messy, to make it hostile, to call you a racist. You know, if anybody ever spoke to me on my programs about Jewish influence in the media or in politics, I was inclined to say, oh, well, look, that's just old racial stereotypes. And I'm ashamed to say, Philip, there was a time when I did it. There was a time when I insulted learned men and women, you know, experienced people like yourself, and made a mess of it. But the fact is, if you look at the UK media today, if you look at the media in the United States, there is a disproportionate number of Jewish Americans or UK Jewish citizens related to the overall population of Jews in our countries making big decisions at the top of these media organisations. And it's intellectually redundant for me to say to you, or any presenter to say to you, that's racism. Because it isn't, Philip, it's a fact. It's a fact that in the media, and the media is much more than Sky News and Fox, it's magazines, it's video games, it's films, it's TV shows, it's everything. It is largely controlled by Jewish interest groups. It is. And this is why there's the Twitter storm and the madness and you being called all these names. I mean, you've served your country. And Valerie Plame, you know, did a great service for her country. Because the media is controlled by these same Jewish interests. We can't get away from that, right?
Well, I don't think we can get away with it. And all I'm asking for, or was asking for in my articles, was to be more honest about this. Now, if I were to write those same articles and say, oh, neoconservatives or Zionists, nobody would have batted an eyelash. But the fact that I identified all the players or many of the players in this drive to go to war with Iran and this drive to basically be in constant war with all of the Arab nations, as Jewish, and also let's not forget about Jewish organizations, very powerful here in the United States, and I would gather they are also in Britain. And the organizations have the money, they have the access to the politicians, they have the media outlets under their control. They are basically able to shape this narrative about what is going on in the Middle East, and it's all being shaped in favor of the Jewish state, Israel. Shouldn't those two things be connected?
You made some brilliant points as well, and I want to come to those in a minute about people, about Jewish men and women doing the honorable thing and recusing themselves from positions where decisions are being made about the Middle East, for example. This is really good stuff, Philip. Not many people have done that, and I like that. But before that, I was, of course, hugely interested in the choice of term you used to identify these people. You said Jews, and I have no problem with that whatsoever. And you're reluctant to use the term Zionist, and you're going to explain, of course, you'll educate me now as to why you did that. Because these people that you named, they are avowed Zionists, aren't they? They are avowed political Zionists, these people. Why make the differentiation? Why say Jewish rather than Zionist? What was your thoughts behind that?
Well, my thinking was that I've known a number of these people, both when I was in the government and shortly thereafter, before, at the time when I was starting to write for magazines and websites. And a lot of them don't identify. First of all, they would refuse to be identified as neocons, because that has been taken over as a pejorative. And many of them don't even recognize themselves as Zionists. They have a tribal or a cultural affinity for Israel. Very rarely religious. It's usually something quite different. But it's many of them don't identify as Zionists. So I'm saying we have to escape from the lock that the use of these words is putting on us, because these are not necessarily Zionist organizations, for example, that do the hard work and provide the money and provide the personnel to push the Israeli agenda. These are Jewish organizations, and Israel is the Jewish state. So I was thinking you're kind of opening up our minds a little bit by looking at this issue in a different way.
We've got the former CIA, of course, counter-terrorism expert and military intelligence officer Philip Giraldi live on the line. We will put out links to the articles. The excellent American Jews Are Driving America's Wars, and the equally good follow-up to it, How I Got Fired. The American Conservative, which didn't carry the first article, the former article, contacted Philip and said, after 15 years, we're ending the relationship because of the article which appeared on UNS.com. You called him a coward, Philip, and I don't blame you for that. What was his response? His response was it mealy-mouthed, or did he try to explain that maybe he was under pressure? Did you find out, was he put under pressure by any particular party?
Well, I don't know. I've been trying to find out since I was fired. I have some friends on the board, and I've been probing them gently. But everybody is very closed-mouthed about what happened. I have a suspicion that there was probably one or two individuals involved in this who basically are very, very nervous about this kind of issue. The American Conservative doesn't really criticize Israel and Israeli policy very much, except when I'm writing. So they essentially shy away from the issue. So I suspect it was one or two individuals, but at this point, I don't know who they are.
You mentioned in your article today Gilad Atzmon. He's a close friend of mine and a regular contributor to this program. And Gilad raised the point in his most recent book called Being in Time. I don't know if you've seen it, Philip. A post-political manifesto. It's about identity politics. And he makes a very good point that one of the problems we have in terms of trying to deal with the rise of Jewish power and the nature of its influence in the UK and in America is that criticism of Israel and Zionism is often left to lefty Jews. And this can be problematic. Do you see where Gilad is going with that? And do you, of course you understand it. Do you think he's onto something? You know, often the only criticism we get, at least in the mainstream media, of Israel, of its policies, is from, you know, the intellectual lefty Jew, shall we say. And the genteel is happy to, you know, exempt himself from the argument. Let the Jews fight it out amongst themselves. And this is no good. Gilad's made that argument. What do you think?
I think Gilad is absolutely right. The problem with opposition to Israel's policies, which are not good for the United States in particular, because the United States has been involved in terms of being dragged into these quarrels, nevertheless suffers from the fact that the Jewish organizations primarily who support Israel have been able to point to the dissidents as people who are leftists, Noam Chomsky types. They've used this very effectively to prevent the creation of a broadly based sense of the Jewish community, and I'm speaking here of Jewish in a cultural sense, many of whom actually are very nervous about what Israel does. And I would note, for example, the Jews in America, more than other Americans, actually support the nuclear arrangement, the nuclear deal with Iran. So the Jewish population or Jews who don't identify with the organizations and with the individuals that I named in my article are very nervous about these things, but they're also nervous about getting too aligned with people they see as leftist extremists.
It's interesting, we see the reaction to some of those people. Mikko Paled was in the UK very recently, was supposed to be on this program but didn't make it. He's been in touch with me, he's back in California. And Mikko was asked to speak at a fringe event at the Labour Party conference. I'm sure you know all this, Philip. I'm just saying this for the benefit of our listeners. And while there, Mikko basically said that free speech should mean free speech. You know, everything should be on the table. You shouldn't be criminalising free speech. And I have a theory, Philip. I believe in my heart and soul that Jews were targeted in Nazi Germany. You know, a lot of Jews were murdered. They were starved to death in camps. They were shot. They were beaten. I have no problems with any of that. And I reject this idea that, you know, Jews didn't suffer in Nazi Germany and all of that. But Mikko was saying that, you know, the real Holocaust deniers, don't silence them, don't criminalise them. I have a theory, and that is, we have a mutual friend, you and I, Norm Finkelstein. And of course, Norm has written extensively about how the Holocaust was politicised and used to justify everything that's been done to Palestine and Palestinians over the last 60 plus years. And I think the terror that Jewish power has for people like you and others, and the reason they call you, you know, an anti-Semite, and the reason they say about other people, oh, they're Holocaust deniers, is not because they really believe that, but they're terrified that if we start talking about the exploitation of the Holocaust, how the memory of people who were killed in Nazi Germany has been used to justify the brutal apartheid occupation of Palestinians, the daily misery and torture that we never hear about in the media. I think there's something in that. What do you think?
Well, Jewish fear of shall we say, the unknown based on what actually happened in the 1940s is legitimate. There's no question about it. And I support that completely. And I also would go farther than that. I would support the Israeli concerns about its neighbor Iran. I think they're legitimate too. But the fact is that both of these real situations have been overlaid with this huge mythology, which is self-supporting and is essentially a fraud. I think the fact is that if Jews are concerned about their position in the countries that they live in, they should actually be more concerned about appearing to be proxies for a foreign country, which by and large has been nothing but trouble for the past 50 years.
Yeah.
They should be concerned about that. There are many Jews in the United States, for example, who make the very clear distinction. They say Judaism is a religion. Israel is a country. They say I am a Jew, but I am not an Israeli. And of course, this distinction is being lost because it's in the interest of the Israel lobby, the Jewish lobby, and of the state of Israel to make these things kind of mix together and be confusing. And while you're doing that, you're also suppressing the ability of people like myself, non-Jews, to critique what's going on. And you do that by claiming that we're anti-Semites. You don't provide us any access in the mainstream media. You make sure if we want to write a book, nobody will publish it. It's this kind of thing that goes on and on and on. Mearsheimer and Walt, in their famous book on the Israel lobby, said there is no explanation why Israel gets the money it gets from the United States and the political cover apart from the action of a powerful domestic lobby that makes all of this happen. And that's what it is. And this is if you're a citizen of the United States, you're not a citizen of Israel. So you should forget about that. If you want to go to Israel, you want to become a citizen, you're free to do so. And the fact that U.S. government officials in high office manipulate policies in favor of Israel is outrageous.
It's treason, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
It is. Let's be honest about it. Let's call a spade a spade. It's treachery. For an American citizen who identifies as Jewish. Now, this is me saying this. This isn't Philip Giralli. I'm sure Philip might have a different point of view to me. You see, I think they're terrified of you, Philip, and some of my friends, the ones I mentioned earlier on, because Jewish exceptionalism and its hegemony depends on the acceptance of the Jewish diaspora and all of that, which is just, for me, it's just garbage. You know, I'm a history graduate. It is utter nonsense. And I think the reason they tried to shoot down, you know, patriots, and listen, I don't know you personally, but I know a lot about you. You're a patriot. You're a decent man. You're a very, very good writer. And you've been around the world. You've seen everything. They're terrified that if they don't shut you down, your work is going to lead people to take a step further. What is this country? How did this country come to be? What is it to be a Jew? Because Jew is an adopted identity. It's a philosophy. It's not a race. Jews are not a race. And they don't want us talking about exceptionalism and why we have these problems. I want to argue with you on one point, though. I think my listeners are. We've not had an argument. We'll have a little argument. You know, I don't like some things about what goes on in Iran, Philip. But they've never been a problem in 5 or 6 centuries to any of their neighbours, have they? You know, Israel. They want to see Israel wiped off the map. All the stuff that was said by, I can't remember his name now. My memory's gone blank all of a sudden. One of the more recent Iranian Ahmadinejad. They say all this about Iran, but there's no proof that Iran really has any designs on hurting or, you know, doing anything to affect what Israel's plans are. Do you understand? I can't see Iran as being a threat to peace in the region. That's just me. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't argue with you. I've, in fact, said exactly what you just said, that Iran, the last time Iran invaded anyone was in 1740. And that's a fact. The Iranians have a minuscule military budget compared to Israel. But what I was saying before about Israel's concerns about Iran are legitimate in the fact that any country confronted with a powerful neighbor has a right to have legitimate concerns. I'm not justifying the way Israel sees things. In fact, former heads of Mossad and former generals from Israel have said that Iran does not constitute a threat. They say this thing when they're out of office, of course. And of course, this is contradicted by what Netanyahu and others are saying. So no, I think the fear that Israel has about Iran is irrational, just as the fear the United States seems to have about Iran is irrational. But these things happen in spite of whether they make sense or not.
Philip is going to stay with us for another 5 minutes or so. I know that there are other programs looking to speak with him today, so I'm mindful of that. Thanks for staying with us, Philip. Huge reaction to this on social media, on Twitter. People are fascinated to hear this. They're really interested in it. Patricia has tweeted, dual citizenship, US stroke Israel in government as a Jew, where is true loyalty? And this is, you know, the basis for Philip's first article, terrific article, brilliantly researched, and asking a brilliant, an outstanding, and a very telling, a very pressing question. Who are these politicians and lobbyists working for in DC? Are they working in the best interests of their country, which is the United States of America, where they are a citizen, where they were born, or are they acting in the interests of, let's be honest about it, the rogue apartheid state of Israel? Couple of questions, Philip. Is this all about the expansion of Israel through the Greater Israel plans? Number one. And number two, if people don't start paying attention to you in the UK and in America, and if this all-pervasive influence that Israel and, you know, Jewish power wields here, if it isn't checked, where's it all going to end up? Those are the two questions.
Well, that's a good question. I don't know where this is going to end up. I think that the many Jews in America certainly are recognizing that this close connection of Jewish organizations with the Jewish state of Israel has certain dangers in it. And I kind of think at a certain point, the situation will be unsustainable. The United States is giving Israel every year large amounts of money, which it no longer has to give. And at this point, I think it is very close to essentially withdrawing from the nuclear agreement with Iran under Israeli and American Jewish pressure, and that this would be devastating and could easily lead to a war. And if there is a war, it will be a catastrophic war. Iran certainly has the capability to strike back in ways that Saddam Hussein did not. So I see these things playing out. So I don't know. I don't have any simple answers to where we're going with this. I just think that everyone should start to. Here's the simple answer. The simple answer is the UK, the United States, every country, France, with a large Jewish minority, should treat Israel just like any other country. The principle of foreign policy is that you act in terms of your own interests. The United States, Britain, and France, when dealing with Israel, do not act in terms of their own interests. They act in the interests of Israel to a large extent because they are driven by powerful, wealthy domestic lobbies. So I think essentially if the countries, our countries, could at a certain point say, Israel is just another foreign country, let's deal with it based on our interests and the merits of the case, that would be a solution. But will that happen? I just don't know.
Absolute final question, Philip, and thanks again for coming on. Philip Giraldi has been our guest this hour. Been really good to hear from him. The articles are on Twitter and on our Facebook page, so you can read them if you haven't read them already. We're seeing here incredible things happening. You know, the campaign against anti-Semitism, which is a very small group of people, but actually they have charity status, Philip, in this country, which is extraordinary. To get charity status in this country, rule number one, and it is without exception, you can't be a political group. And they're hounding people over here for asking questions about Jewish influence. You know, people like Gilad, we mentioned earlier on, Alison Shablow. We've seen David Icke. We've had venues threatened that they can't host speakers, international speakers, who are talking about, you know, everything and anything. Most often they're not talking about Israel and Jewish influence. They do, but not exclusively. Your article, of course, alludes to legislation looming in your country to criminalise talking about Zionists, to criminalise talking about Jewish power, to make it racist. This is tyrannical. I mean, again, you've been around a long time. You know, you're a man who's behaved like a patriot. You're an advocate of free speech. These are terrifying times. If a minority group like this can act, you know, ride roughshod over freedom of speech and freedom of the press and destroy careers and threaten venues and threaten... In your case, they must have been on to the American Conservative to demand that they let you go, and they did. Finally, the final word on that. What do you say to people about that? What do we need to do to prevent this from getting any further? To prevent this from becoming, you know, what they want it to be, which is a crime punishable by whatever, whether it's a fine or whether it's prison. What do we need to do to stop this madness?
Well, the principal issue at the moment seems to be declaring any criticism of Israel as anti-Semitism, and anti-Semitism is a hate crime. Now, that there's been legislation to that effect, I know, in Britain. In France, it already exists. In Canada, it's legislation like this has been moving forward. And in the U.S., it has a slightly different focus in that it goes after the Palestinian movement and so on and so forth. My argument would be that you cannot, you should not ever, ever limit the ability of people to basically say what's in their mind. Freedom of speech is the fundamental issue upon which all other freedoms are built. And I think that we people who are opposed to these hate crime issues and these issues that are being politicized to stop people from talking have to push back from that direction. Say that, you know, freedom of speech is a fundamental right. It is the fundamental right. And singling out any group or any country and saying you cannot criticize them is a terrible thing. And it should not be supported by any government.
Philip, I've enjoyed having you back on. Thanks for doing that. I'm genuinely sorry that the American Conservative did that to you. It was a disgraceful thing to do to you. You know, you've been writing for them for many years. Your articles are fair. You mightn't agree with, I'm not saying me personally, but people might not agree with some of the things you've said. But you're supposed, guys like you are supposed to be challenging people, challenging their perceptions and their absolutes and their ideas. And it's a sad day for journalism when you get dropped for doing what you did, which was provoke a debate and ask some hard questions. Folks, you can go to unz.com to read more of Philip. Philip, is there a link you'd like to share with us? Is there somewhere else you'd like our listeners to go just before we say goodbye?
No, if they go to UNZ, they'll find all of my articles collected there.
Thanks for doing it, Philip. Look after yourself. We'll talk again.
Thank you.
Bye for now. Philip Giraldi on the line to us there from his home, former a CIA counter-terrorism specialist and a man who's appeared on many television programs over the years, 60 Minutes, CBS News, Fox News, CNN, everywhere talking about US foreign policy issues, wrote an article about the unnatural and all-pervasive influence by Jewish power, effectively, in DC and in London, and where that's all going to lead. For UNS.com and the American Conservative, where he didn't write the article, they said, well, because of what you've written, we can't do business with you anymore. And after 15 years, he was left go. And you heard him on Tuesday's Richie Allen Show in association with DavidIke.com. Going to take a breather. Got some the bravery. Some the bravery. I could have said I've got some bravery. I'm not brave. No bravery here. This is an honest mistake, and it's the Richie Allen Show on DavidIke.com. Not another show like it. Europe's most listened to independent radio show, that's a fact. Follow us on YouTube. It is the Richie Allen Show on YouTube. Do subscribe to me there. I'm on Twitter and Facebook as well. I want to give another big shout out to the brand spanking new, terrific, very user-friendly DavidIke.com. Check it out if you haven't done it before. This is an honest mistake, back in 3 minutes.
fills your mind full of ideas, yet you struggle to put them down on paper. Characters with no home, unfinished concepts that you always wanted to finalize, yet lacked knowledge and drive to complete. The Creative Writing Course from Creative Imaginings may be the long-awaited answer, designed to help you finish your masterpiece with better language techniques, detailed study of the character, plotted suspense chain, and valuable information to get published. Don't delay your creation. Complete your 100% online course at www.creativeimaginings.com.au.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
Introducing the H2O app, a powerful water structuring application that programs vibrational energies into water through the use of different sound frequencies. Once programmed, the use of water for drinking, cooking, bathing. Give it to your friends and colleagues or spread it around the garden. The list goes on. It's not just water that the app can be used for either. It's great for programming crystals too. The H2O app is free to download and is available on both Android and Apple platforms. For further information, go to h2oapp.online.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markmajerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
For critical information ignored by the mainstream media, log on to davidicke.com/headlines now.
And that means I'm back. Yeah, I was just reading something there. My apologies. I hadn't forgotten about you. I hadn't gone anywhere. Yes, it's Tuesday, October 3rd. This is The Richie Allen Show. I'm looking forward tomorrow to catching up with a lady. I was mentioning this to David today, called Charlotte Hughes. A really wonderful woman. She was on the programme, Charlotte, not long after it began, back in 2014. She's not been back since then. She's an activist. She works on behalf of people who are disabled, and she works on behalf of the poorest people in our society. She spent a lot of time, Charlotte, over the last couple of days at the Conservative Party conference, which is in Manchester. You can still smell them. We've closed all our windows for the 4 days they're in town, all of us on our street, our neighbourhood. There's a peculiar smell from Conservatives. I don't know what it is, but I jest, of course. They're all the same, all these parties, regardless of where they place themselves on the spectrum. They're all the bloody same. But Charlotte's been down there, along with a lot of other people, making her presence and their presence felt to the bastard Tories. Now, she'll be on the programme tomorrow talking about universal credit, which is killing people in this country. Now, you know, we talk about the Hunger Games Society. That was a phrase coined by David after he saw the Hunger Games, and he realised that while watching it, the dystopian future that they depict in the film is being rolled out, you know, almost verbatim in this world, in this reality that we're experiencing here. And universal credit is what they've done is, traditionally, people who need financial help from the state in the UK. Now, you might be thinking, if you're in America or if you're listening in Australia, oh, this doesn't apply to me. It does. Listen up. It applies to everybody, no matter where you are. Now, traditionally in the UK, people who need help from the state were paid on a weekly basis. Then it moved to a fortnightly basis. And people who get benefits, essential benefits, they used to come maybe in two or three different payments. You know, they might get unemployment assistance. This used to be called the dole. And on top of that, they might get another allowance. They might get an allowance towards their heating, their fuel, right? And they might get a third allowance towards their housing, towards their rent. These would be different allowances. Sometimes they would be paid at different times of the month, which would tide people over. Now, don't think for a minute that these people were getting paid lots of money to do nothing. No, they weren't. You couldn't survive on the money given to them by the state. I know some of our right-leaning listeners will be saying, Richie, you're full of shite. I saw Benefit Street on the TV. I read the Daily Mail. The Daily Mail's not a bad newspaper, as far as newspapers go. There are still some very good articles in it from time to time. But when they publish articles about a woman with 20 children who's earning £50,000 a year in state benefits, it's bullshit. It's the exception, not the rule. You couldn't live on what the majority of people get by way of disability benefit or by way of unemployment benefit. You couldn't. How do you know that? I'll tell you. Because back in 2015, just after the sponsor for this programme, who said he would cover the programme's expenses for a year, pulled out and we were left with no money for about 2 months, just under 6 weeks, I think, I went down to the old job centre myself. I did. I paid enough money in not only in taxes, but of course in social insurance contributions over the years. So I know a little bit about it. You couldn't live on it. You couldn't. It's a joke. But anyway, it's what they give people. So, further to the Hunger Games Society agenda, which David is talking about, some bright spark decided they were going to take these payments, housing benefit, housing assistance, unemployment assistance, maybe, as I said, heating allowance and stuff like that. We are going to amalgamate these payments. Do you like that word? Amalgamate. We're going to put all these payments together and you're going to get them once a month. Once a month. And not only that, but in the process of putting all these payments together, we are going to evaluate, and 99 times out of 100, we're going to drop the overall sum that you're getting. Are you with me, dear listener? You with me? You're with me. So what does that mean? It means it is crucifying the poorest and the worst off in our country. It is literally killing them. And Charlotte Hughes has been telling me, she's a really, really, really special lady, this lady. She's been telling me, Richie, we have evidence of it killing people. People are committing suicide. The paltry money they're getting, now that they're getting it once a month, they're finding that within a few days or a week, they've got nothing. Which leads them to, if they're lucky enough to borrow from somebody who they know, all well and good. But if not, they're borrowing from a payday lender, or worse, from some local scumbag moneylender. And then they're in deeper shit than you could even imagine. And the government says this is brilliant, it's helping people, it's encouraging them to get back to work. No, it isn't. It's killing people. As it was designed to do. It's a stark reality to be talking about stuff like this seriously. And there's no punchline at the end of it to say, oh, it's all a joke. It isn't a joke. They are killing people. They want to kill people. And you have the sickening, disgusting reality, to use that word reality again, of multi-millionaire con men and women and criminals, the Tory front bench, talking about how this is going to help people when they know it's going to kill them, as they go to Manchester's finest restaurants and pay £200 to £300 for a dinner with fine wines. Fat bastards, all of them, right? And listen, I'm not I have no problems. I don't judge somebody by the way they look. I never have done and I never will, ever. Nor should anybody. When I say fat bastards, I'm thinking of those mafiosa dons. You know, they used to call, in Sicily, they used to refer to the mafia men as a man with a belly, figuratively, as well as metaphorically. Man with a belly, big man, big fat fucker, right? And you look at these Tories, look at them. They had a load of them on Sky News today, various ministers, not even the secretaries of state. They didn't have secretaries of state so much as ministers working at those departments. All of them with big fucking jowls. Big fat bastards, greedy consumer fuckers. While millions of people in this country have no idea whether they'll have a breakfast in the morning, whether they'll have a dinner for their child tomorrow. And these people are talking about how this is a wonderful idea, this universal system, universal credit, lump all the payments in, reduce them, make them monthly, and everything will be hunky-dory. Are we finished with the interview now? We are. Right, brilliant. I'm off to San Carlo restaurant on Deansgate, where I will spend in an hour on food, basically what some poor bugger's got to live on for a month. So we'll be talking about that with Charlotte Hughes tomorrow, and more besides on the programme as well. So we will. I mentioned about David earlier on in the speaking tour, which continues. Of course, go to davidicke.com to find out where David is going to be later this year. He's in Eastern Europe soon enough as well. He's in Maastricht, in Holland, of course, very soon. And then he'll be doing three events for the launch of his new book. What's interesting is the Edinburgh event is sold out, but there are tickets left for the event in London and in Manchester, and I will be at both those events, basically introducing David. You won't have to put up with me. I won't have much to do, but I'll be introducing David and having a conversation with him and taking questions as well from the audience to launch his new book, which is due out in a few weeks' time, in November sometime. Again, for more information on all of that, quite simply go to davidicke.com. You'll find out all the info on that there. Right. Kind of it, really, isn't it? Not really a lot more to tell you today. Charlotte has tweeted me. And she says, Richie, even being paid monthly when you're in employment only serves the employer, but it cripples us all. By week two or week three, we have sod all left. That's from Charlotte on Twitter. And Charlotte, I can absolutely identify with that. Barely making it to the end of the month. And at the end of the month, you're like, Jesus, we just scraped by another month again. And the future Mrs. Allen and me, we're no different than anybody. If we were to go a couple of months without money coming in, we're finished. It's all over. And that's where the system has placed all of us. That's where we are. They have us hanging on the edge of a cliff. Think about your own circumstances. If you miss two paydays, you're gone. That's what they've done. That's it then, really, isn't it? I want to give a shout out as well. Jamie is back. Jamie Icke with Jamie Icke's Friday Night, a week on Friday, which to me is the 12th of October. So a week on Friday, Jamie will be here. I know he's got a very special guest lined up already. I know who the guest is, and it's very exciting, but I'm not going to steal his thunder. He'll be telling you himself on his own Facebook pages and on davidicke.com in the next few days, but he's got a brilliant guest lined up for Friday, October 12th. Put it in the diary. Jamie Icke's Friday Nights. Done two of those already. I've really enjoyed listening to them. And I really have. There's no sycophancy here. He's new, Jay. He's new to broadcasting, but he's good. And he's conscientious, and he's a good listener, which makes a good broadcaster. And I'm looking forward to the next installment of Jamie Icke's Friday Night, which will be on October 12th, which is a Friday week. Right, stay in touch with davidicke.com, Fab Radio 2, and fabradiointernational.com. I've been Richie Allen. I will speak with you again tomorrow at 7 p.m. British summertime, while it lasts, while it's left. Leaving you with this from Bruce Springsteen. Let's hope this is on the agenda. See you tomorrow.
Can't see nothing in front of me. Can't see nothing coming up behind. Make my way through this
darkness. I can't feel nothing but this chain that binds me. Lost track of how far I've gone. How far I've gone, how high I've climbed. On my back's a 60-pound stone. On my shoulder, half mile of line. Come on up for the rising. Come on up, lay your hands in line. Come on up for the rising. Come on up for the rising line. Left the house this morning.
Children dancing in the sky. They're